You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Friend, my hetero life partner, as he called me one day on the air. Yeah, who whenever I'm around him, it's always the bright side of the road. Joins us now, the one and only Pete Kimball Holmes, the only man that's ever been designated as the head chef of All Marine Radio. So, Kim, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mac. Good morning, Marines everywhere.
Yeah, Kim's dad, veteran of World War II. How about the Marine Corps re-identifying another person in that flag raising after 74 years? And I don't know if you saw the NBC report that his daughter says he never said a word about it. We knew he fought on the island. We knew he was wounded. But he came home and he was just our dad. And to think that that's him is mind-blowing. How about that?
Yeah, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
They were different. We were talking about now. Hell, everybody have their cameras out, taking selfies up there, right? You'd have more. It'd be all on Twitter by the afternoon. Hey, check me out. I'm in, but and he's the second, the first guy who they identified, a guy named Harold Schultz, became a postman here in Los Angeles. And only on one occasion did people that he knew remember him ever saying that he just casually said over dinner, his wife, her stepdaughter were sitting at the table. The phone rings, the wife gets on the phone, and for whatever reason, that image is out, and he looks and he says, I was in that picture. And she just looked at him and says, what? And he just said, yeah, I was in that. I'm in that picture. That's the only time in his life he ever says anything. This guy, his nickname is Pie, right? He's from Iowa. He must have liked pie, I would guess. And so he goes home. He never says anything about it. And so different time. Amazing. The greatest generation.
Humble man.
Yeah, humble man who came home and did what your dad did, right? Your dad, an American war hero.
Yeah.
Right? Come back and went to work and supported your family.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, it's an amazing story, and the other really interesting part of it is where this comes from, and it comes from guys who've never served in the Marine Corps, who one's from Ireland, right? He notices something that is as plain as a nose on your face in pictures, but nobody ever paid any attention to it. And we were just talking about it. Another guy says when they were making flags of our fathers, the prop guys came up to Dale Dye, who was an advisor in all Tom Hanks stuff, right? All the World War II stuff, that Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers. Dale Dye is he's a retired Marine, but he's a technical advisor in Hollywood. And they come up and they say, hey, look, Bradley is wearing this. The corpsman is wearing this, after the first flag raising. But in the flag, he's not wearing any of that stuff. Like, can you explain that to us? And they looked at the pictures like, no, we can't explain it. But the Marine Corps investigated it, and that's Bradley. But they said, you looked at the pictures, and you're like, whoa. So anyway, and then the same, and now they've got the FBI involved in this one, the FBI's digital, imagery and all the rest. And they said, no, it's Harold Keller for sure. And so anyway, but just an amazing story. So anyway, so what are you up to? What's going on? How's life?
I had a CAT scan the other day.
Yeah.
For my back.
Yeah. And
I'm waiting to hear from Dr. Ryan to set up an appointment for pain management so I can get a little bit more mobile.
What's wrong with your back?
In my lower back. And I'm going to have to get a shot.
Oh, you want to know? I was having problems with my lower back, right?
Yeah.
And so I, I think it's the chair that I was sitting in for many hours, right, that I work in. And you're essentially, it's a 90-degree chair, so you wind up, your back's at a 45-degree angle, and you're bent over. And so I bought one of those stools that is kind of rotated forward, and there's a place you put your knees, but you're essentially, your hips are rotated forward, so you sit up straight. No problems anymore.
Problem solved.
Yeah. At first I saw it. I'm like, I'm not. But I've learned how to sit in it. There's like five different positions that you could sit. Colleen's made two of them up. Hey, Dad, why don't you try this? If you turn it around and sit like this, I'm like, I don't think that's how it's designed there, pumpkin head. She's like, I know, but you could do it like that. I'm like, you know what, Colleen? You're right. So that's how I do it. And now I think about sitting in the same position in a chair all day. And I'm like, yeah, that probably wasn't very good for my back. So
no.
Anyway.
Well, I have one of those chairs in the living room that it's, I call it my elevator chair.
Elevator chair?
Well, it's, you get in it, you have a little control thing, and you can move it to different positions. And one of the positions is zero gravity.
Ooh. Ooh.
I'm always on zero gravity, man. So I move it around because so I'm not just sitting in a fixed position all the time. And it helps my back a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tell you, you know, if, again, somebody asked me this the other day or sent me an email. Hey, Mac, I heard you have problems with your back and you bought one of those things. You know, do you recommend it? I said, absolutely. Absolutely. A couple things I would recommend now in retrospect. One, and I'll do this at some point. I'll buy one of those desktops that you can raise and lower, right? It's a standing desktop. So you can sit in it. And then when you hit a button, you can stand and, you know, I'd essentially do the show from a standing position. And then this chair, which you can, you know, you can sit in it forward. So you can sit with your butt on it, and then you can, and then with your knees, you know, rest on this stand. Okay. Then number two, you take your knees off that stand and you put your feet flat on the floor. That's a position, and you're still in that back straight position. You can then, when you don't feel like sitting like that anymore, you then put your ass on what your knees sit on, and you sit pretty straight up, and you're low, so, you know, you're still straight. You're not bent over at the desk. And then you can turn it all the way around, and you can sit with your hips are rotated forward, so your back is straight, and your lower two is just a little bit different. So, oh, yeah, I'm like all over the place now. Max 40 positions throughout the course of the day. So, yeah. All
position.
All ergonomically correct.
Absolutely.
So,
you're always ergonomically correct.
I really haven't. I have paid no attention to what ergonomic even means. What about here's an email. Mac, are you and Kim going to talk about the Yankees? Well, you know what, Kim, I'll throw this out to you. Here's one of the things you're seeing in the baseball playoffs. The Yankees thought that they didn't need starting pitchers, great starting pitchers, and they really went out and they got a bunch of really good relief pitchers. Doesn't work in the playoffs. Those guys can't pitch every night. And the more they pitch, the less effective they are because the other team sees them, right? The other team sees them too much. So the Yankees, that was their model. The Dodgers starting pitcher, they have that young kid who's a stud named Belcher. Bueller, right?
Yes.
That kid is, but beyond that, right, they don't have two guys like Washington had. And in a best of seven series, you've got to beat Scherzer. You've got to beat Strasburg. And you've got to beat Corbin. You've got to beat them four times.
Three or four guys you've got to beat.
Right. And then Houston, Cole doesn't lose. He's like, he's never in baseball history has anybody been on a run like he's on a run. He's won, I think, 20 straight games. Doesn't happen.
Wow.
Yeah. And so you've got to beat him and Verlander. You've got to beat them. Yeah. And the Yankees aren't going to do it. I remind everybody. I said this from the start.
Tonight, didn't he?
Yeah, Verlander goes tonight. Yeah. And so you're going to see, like, Koufax Drysdale stuff in the World Series that will be Houston against Washington. You're going to see pitchers that are, you know, that are worthy of the Koufax Drysdale name. It's going to be, I mean, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be
and
awesome.
Somebody that goes more than 100 pitches.
Oh, yeah. The other night, you know, Verlander did it. You saw Strasburg do it. You saw Scherzer do it. I mean, they're like, first of all, Scherzer with Washington, that guy should have been a Marine, okay? He's a nut, okay? I love that guy. I love that guy. But no, but that's, you know, and so I was talking earlier. It defies logic to me, right, how the Yankees could conclude that, yeah, we could actually win in the playoffs like this. You could win in the regular season like that. But you,
yeah, well, they did.
But you can't win in the playoffs like that. So you can't engineer. And this whole thing with an opener and all that. Yeah, look, that's all quaint and good in the regular season when you have to do it. But you're not going to win in the playoffs like that. Ain't going to happen. So anyway.
The Yankees can afford. They'll go out and buy some starting pitching. But the Dodgers better get a new manager.
No, they're not. They're not. He's coming back.
No, say it ain't so, Joe.
Yeah, no, dude, let me just tell you, the Dodgers, they have a corporate way they do it. And, you know, and Dave Roberts, in my opinion, stood out there and took the heat for the decision that was made by a lot of people in that organization, right? Exactly. And you know what? The way they formulate that stuff, it is, in my opinion, the statistics that they form it on, regular season statistics, don't work in the playoffs. You would have to pare that statistical sample down to who are the best pitchers in the league? What did these guys do against those pitchers? Not everybody. Well, he does this against left-hand pitching. Okay, throw 85% of those guys out of sample. Show me what he does against that group. And it's different. But I don't think that his decision to leave Clayton Kershaw in was his decision alone. I believe that's what they scripted, and that's what he did, and he stood out there and took the blame. That's why he's not getting fired. If that was his decision alone, his ass would be fired. That's my opinion, because Let me tell you. I met a Dodger fan the other night.
What?
I met a Dodger fan the other night, right?
Yeah.
And she was rip shit still about I can't be a Dodger fan anymore because this is the third straight year where they've screwed it up, right? That they had a great team, but they screwed up the pitching and they blew a shot at the World Series twice in the World Series and now once in the first round of the playoffs for them.
Yeah.
I said, come on, you can't like quit on your team. She's like, no, I'm so mad. I'm so mad at them. I don't want to be a Dodger fan anymore. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. It hurts. And I've been suffering a long time with them.
Here's an email. Mac, you sound uncharacteristically laissez-faire about the Yankees getting pummeled. I didn't believe that the Yankees could beat Houston, right? Again, I understand the little engine that could, that's a fairy tale. It doesn't happen, but on rare, rare, rare occasions, right? There's a reason why that's a fairy tale, because most of the time, the better team wins in a seven-game series. And clearly, Verlander and Cole, so the Yankees' task was win every game they don't pitch and then beat one of them once. That's too – come on, man. That ain't happening. So, yeah.
They're looking to win two games. That's it.
Well, I mean, they might –
they're
Justin Verlander, do you think Justin Verlander is going to be moderately fired up to pitch in Yankee Stadium tonight with a chance to eliminate them? Come on. And you hear all the Astros saying, look, you know, this place is going to be really intimidating. And I saw one of them say, you want to know what's great about playing Yankee Stadium? The Yankee fans, love their team, right? Like all the fans around the league love their team, right? They crazy love their team. The difference in New York City with Yankee fans is they hate the other team like nobody else hates the other team. So you get both of that. You get the love and the hate, and it's crazy to play here. And then you add the history, you know, and we haven't always done well here. We got swept here in, what, July? And it wasn't a pleasant experience. But, you know, in terms of adrenaline rush as a player, come on, man. And now Jay Verlander is going to go out there today. Right,
and you know how pumped he is. he loves the haters.
Oh my God! Yeah. Come on,
hit away on me, baby. Watch this pitch.
but it is great theater, though. Honestly, it is awesome theater. And watching the Nationals win that series, they haven't since the days of the Washington Senators. Man, that's what we're
talking about. 1934,
44. That's 34. Crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. So, no, it's exciting. Patrick lives blocks from the stadium. He said he went outside the other night. He said, and you could hear the screaming from the stadium.
Yeah.
He said it was awesome.
He's going to hear it next week. That's for sure.
Wait.
But they start out in Houston, don't they?
I don't know. I haven't got that far. I'll draw the line there. I don't know. I think who had the better record? That gets the best record in baseball when you see them. That's how you get home advantage, right? Home field advantage, I think. And I think Houston had the best. Well, I know Houston had a better record than Washington. So I believe that means that it would open in Houston, right? They go 2-3-2. That's the way they do it. So anyway. Here's a food question. Mac, I hope you don't mind. I know you're enjoying watching and talking about sports. Do you mind if I ask a food question? Well, not really. Right? I really enjoyed the chef's clam chowder segment that you did last week or the week before. I made it, and I listened to the things he said, and then I spiced it up in my own particular way. But I now am really enjoying making clam chowder, so I just want to say thank you to him for that. My question, and I think you touched on it a little bit, but for those of us that enjoy onion in clam chowder?
Yeah.
And if so, which kind of onion?
A yellow onion is what I use. Just your regular over-the-counter grocery store yellow onion. And something I forgot to say last week was you take salt pork and you can buy a little cube of salt pork, about a half a pound. It's cheap as can be. And you want to mince that up. And you want to start out your clam chowder by cooking that in butter or oil, at your preference. You get it, and then you add your onions, okay, after the salt pork. And that gives that clam chowder a spectacular flavor.
Wait. After you say, I don't even, I'm not understanding the word you're saying. You said after you, and what is it called?
Soft pork.
Soft pork?
Salt. S-A-L-T.
Yeah.
Salt pork. P-O-R-K.
Salt
and
pork.
It's very salty pork. It's like your bacon fat is basically what it is, and everybody loves bacon.
Come on.
If they don't, they're not American.
Come on, but, man.
Yeah. But you take a little bit of that and see.
All right.
About an ounce and a half of salt pork.
Ounce and a half of salt pork.
And you mince it up. And then, and you put that in the pan first, and you get that cooking, and then you add your onions and continue cooking the soft pork and onions and until the onions are translucent. You don't want to turn them brown. You just want to get them clear.
Right.
And then you start building your roux, you know, your flour.
Right. Now, would you use bacon instead of salt pork, and what's the difference?
Well, there's no color in salt pork. It's all white. It's just pork fat that's been salted. And that's all the difference.
Got it.
You sure can use bacon, but you have to mince it up very fine. But you want to use soft pork and get it in the deli or in the grocery store. It'll be, you know, it looks like about a tennis ball size in a cube square.
Hold on. This just in, China has denied that it pressured the NBA to fire Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey. How do you know the Chinese are lying? Their lips are moving, okay? They are so bullshit. And watching the NBA do the Texas two-step, trying to protect their money and not say the obvious that, yeah, we're not cool with Hong Kong. Man, I know the Chinese government doesn't want us to say that, but come on, man. 90% of our players are black. They understand what it is to fight oppression, right? And I know we're trying to protect our money, but at some point the lid's going to blow on this thing. And it hasn't yet, because LeBron James, let me just tell you, LeBron James is going to get it everywhere he goes until he somehow or other gets correct on this issue. But people are going to have Chinese flags. They're going to burn his jersey. He is going to catch shit like few human beings do because he tried to, you know, say, you know, we've got to be smarter about, you know, about the repercussions. Like, what are you saying? We've got to protect our money better, right? What are you saying? And he, man, talk about stepping in it, right? And then he tried to clarify it, and all he did was make it worse. So it just
he stepped in it big time, and as far as I'm concerned, NBA can go in the corner with their guaranteed contracts and count their money, and same teams are going to end up in the finals. With a variation of two or three options, but that's about it.
Yeah, it was just interesting because this is what China does all over the world, right? You want access to to sell into our country, we will tell you, and you know, and the United States, if we want to, we could tell them to, you know, look what's happened. I mean, our lifestyle hasn't been materially affected. You know, I don't know, maybe some people's have, but my lifestyle hasn't been impacted by, you know, China and what goes on. And I know pork producers and all that, but you know what? You know, the rest of the country, we can do that. If you're a smaller developing country, when they tell you that you're going to, you know, put on a blonde wig and a red dress and you're going to dance, guess what you do? You're trying to, right?
You're dancing down the highway in
any particular shade of red you want?
Sneakers.
Yeah, bright red. But again, that's what they do around the country. And then, I mean, they get people fired at universities that are trying to tell the truth about, you know, what the Chinese have done. You know, the million Uyghurs, Muslims that are in concentration camps in Western China. You know, but everybody will look the other way to include Apple, Google, you know, all the Nike, but Kim, the best part though is the Colin Kaepernick thing, right? Right? Stand for something, even if it means losing everything. Nike, Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
And again, we talked about it last week. Moral courage extends to the steps of my bank. When you start getting into my money, yeah, then that stuff, come on, man. Don't take that stuff too seriously. So, anyway, pretty fucking lame in my opinion. Here's another email. Mac, I have a question for the chef. What is his favorite kind of cheese to eat with crackers?
Oh, my favorite kind of cheese is a soft cheese. It could be a camembert, a brie, certain types of goat cheese.
Well, pick one. Pick one. They didn't say give us your 10 favorite cheeses. Give us, pick one cheese that you're going to eat with crackers. What?
That would be brie.
Brie? I don't even know what that is.
B-R-I-E. B-R-I-E. It's a soft cheese made beautifully in the United States and California, Wisconsin, all over. Artisan cheesemakers. It's a soft, creamy, kind of pungent. Has a little smell from aging. Not a stinky foot smell, but I just think it's delicious. And it spreads on crackers or bread.
Brie cheese. I'm a Swiss cheese guy. Swiss cheese with club crackers. You want to make Mac happy?
That's a hard cheese.
Yeah, bomb that shit out, right? I'll be your girl. Here's another email, heading to Nashville. This is from Dave in Vacaville. Hey, Mac, I'm heading to Nashville for 9 days. Ask Kim if there are any restaurants he recommends. You're not a Nashville guy, though, are you, Kim?
I'm not a Nashville guy, but when you're in Nashville, they do, I don't know if you like hot food, but there are a couple places there that are known for hot fried chicken. They fry their chicken with just like regular fried chicken, and then they dunk it in this hot sauce combination. It, you know, it's not sriracha or anything like that. It's some concoction that they make up in the South. And if you want to try something, or also, you better have grits down there in Nashville. There's a dish called shrimp and grits. If you see it, eat it. And any barbecue.
Yeah, you know what? Isn't there a big thing going on with like hot chicken sandwiches now at restaurants, at fast food places, and like. Did I read a headline like that?
Yes, you did, and that's out of the South. They fry their chicken. I had hot chicken in Minneapolis with our buddy Chad when I was with him, and it was a little Southern joint. And he had his just regular fried chicken, and I said, "Oh, I've never had it. I'll try it." And it was too hot for me. But
I just did a search on it, and what comes up is Nashville style hot chicken sandwich.
Yeah. This was just three pieces, and that's how I had it served, and it was good. But yes, you see, God, I don't know who else who's doing hot chicken sandwiches, but a bunch of chains are doing it now too.
Right.
Popeyes.
Isn't that the one that Popeyes is the one that was had this like Popeyes, Schmopeyes. Here are the 10 best fried chicken sandwiches made in Hampton Roads.
Popeyes is way ahead of Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, Popeyes is Chick-fil-A, man. That's not a bad place to eat.
They put a Chick-fil-A in Grand Forks.
Whoa! Civilization coming to North Dakota.
All the way up here.
What it was like to work at Popeye's during the chicken what's this headline say? During the what? During the chicken sandwich frenzy. The winners of the chicken wars are clearly the chains themselves, but how many of the employees on the front lines fared, how did the employees fare as the popular dishes craziness ensued? So what are the ingredients of a hot chicken sandwich?
Well, it's the type of hot sauce that they, it's thick, it's thinner than a barbecue sauce, but it has some elements of a barbecue sauce, but it mainly has, I think cayenne is the basic, ingredient in whatever, but it's red, and they take their chicken when it's done frying, and then they dip it in this sauce and put it in a basket and throw it out the window with French fries or hush puppies or whatever the hell they serve with them down there. A little slaw, cold slaw. But I don't know what the recipe is for dipping the chicken in, though. Hmm. We'll have to look it up this week. But, Popeye started that.
This is called The Eater, and the article is entitled, "Our Taste Test of the Most Popular Chicken Sandwiches with Severely Flaws." Some reviews of the Popeye's chicken sandwich have been professional, others technical. Ours was neither. First came the sandwich, then came the gradually louder social media buzz, accelerated by manufactured brand wars on Twitter and buoyed by a flood of accompanying media coverage that shows no sign of slowing down. Now, less than 2 weeks after Popeyes rolled out its new fried chicken sandwich nationwide, we are in the third stage of the hype cycle in which heated debates and shortages and hot takes and backlash build off each other, stoking the mania. Now, that's what you call a successful product launch, right?
They had people going crazy because they ran out of the fried chicken sandwich at Popeye's. They almost rioted.
Okay, here's what they did.
A fried chicken sandwich. For an hour to hear this.
You know, I just Chick-fil-A has a spicy chicken sandwich. My kids get that. That's actually pretty good. The final four in this were, according to this article on a website called Eater, is Popeyes, Chick-fil-A, Shake Shack, and Wendy's, right? We plan to buy two sandwiches of each, cut them in fours so that the 8 Eater staff members could participate in the tasting. It would be a blind test, a.k.a. tasters wouldn't know which sandwich hailed from which chain. We decided to figure out the other details of the testing later. Flaw, lack of foresight. So what happened? The day of the taste test, my editor and I left for our respective homes on our respective routes to pick up the sandwiches, timing our departure so that we would arrive at the office roughly at the same time. As it was the middle of afternoon on a hot August day in New York, the temperatures outside were approximately 87 degrees. I would not recommend this as a backdrop for a frantic sandwich acquisition, as it wasn't long before I began to wish I were in literal hell rather than the thick, oil-streaked heat of a crowded fast food restaurant. Right? The least worst chicken sandwich, all right? Number 4, Wendy's spicy chicken sandwich came in 4th. Wendy's fared the worst overall, and in the subcategories of texture, crunch, and toppings, tasters noted that it had a strong peppery taste in the batter. All right, number three of the four, right? Chick-fil-A spicy chicken sandwich. Chick-fil-A sandwich, as beloved as the chain is controversial, scored 2nd in the texture, crunch, and toppings, and 3rd overall. A few tasters noted the assertive spice and thick meat. One participant chose the sandwich as her favorite of the bunch, praising the heat and the flavor. Number 2, Shake Shack chicken sandwich. Perhaps a surprise outcome for those who automatically assumed Chick-fil-A would score higher. Shake Shack turned out to be the dark horse of the competition. The meat, all natural, cage-free, according to the chain, was actually rated the worst. Dry, according to two tasters. Mealy, according to another. I don't even know what that means. But the toppings, pickle and buttermilk herb mayo, were rated the highest. And it should be noted that this sandwich is noticeably smaller than the other products tested. Number one, Popeye's chicken sandwich. The rumors are true. According to the internet, as well as Eater's Tasters, Popeye's was a clear winner in the category, earning top marks by a wide margin in meat, texture, crunch, bun, and overall. The meat was described as moist, the buttermilk batter impressively crisp and craggy, the seasoning flavorful, the pickle crunchy, the brioche bun nicely buttery. Best of the bunch, one person wrote. I want more like that. There you go.
I think there's a Popeye's in Fargo, but I have not.
You got to go, bro. After that.
We're heading down there in a week or two. And that's, I guess, where I'm going to have lunch.
Even I heard about the buzz. I was like, what is going on, man? Why am I reading this? And so it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Now, let's talk about it. So the elements of it are a moist piece of chicken, buttermilk batter, the pickle, and then whatever spread you put on top of that stuff. If you were going to make one on your own, how would you do it?
Well, you fry the chicken, you know, like you would a regular fried chicken.
Okay, tell me about the buttermilk batter, though. How do we do that? Is that, can you go buy a box of it? Can you go buy something and herb it up? Add your own seasonings to it?
That, I don't know. Probably get buttermilk and mix it with a little flour and you know, make a batter with that. And then dip your chicken, your raw chicken in that, and drop it in the fryer. And I'm sure that you have to add some kind of cornstarch or something like that, so it puffs up and makes the batter crunchy. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear. Give me some kind of spicy mayo. Where would I find that? Would I find it at a gourmet foods place? Would I find it in my supermarket? And then
you probably would make your own.
Make your
you
own.
Would. I love sriracha, and I would take a teaspoon of that and mix it with 2 tablespoons of mayo and mix it together so you have heat, but not overpowering heat, and it would perk that mayonnaise up, and that's what I would put on. And then you have to have, a lot of places will use, a dill pickle.
Mm-hmm.
Bread and butter pickles. I would like a sweet pickle in my fried chicken sandwich.
What?
Yeah, it gets a little crunch. A thick one. A thick pickle. Or a Clausen pickle, which is like a deli pickle.
Now, let me ask you about the pickle in the sandwich, though. Most of the times you get pickle spears, and you get them, like, external to the sandwich. Now, what I'm looking at in these sandwiches, Shack Shake, I can't see one at Popeye's. I don't see one in Chick-fil-A. And I don't see one in Wendy's. But is it pickle? So it's pickle slices?
Yeah. Yeah. They're you have your standard, Wendy's would use. It's just a sour sliced dill pickle. And if you upgrade, you'll get a Clausen's. That's a brand name.
Right.
And they have slices of pickles. And I like those. Or I like, my wife makes a bread and butter pickle that's a little sweet, real crunchy, and is about a quarter of an inch thick. And they're killer good.
Here's another email. Mac,
and that, counteract the heat in the the hot mayo.
Yeah.
And complements the crunch. In my opinion, that's just me. That's my taste.
All right. Mac, I've got an idea. How about we combine the bun from In-N-Out Burger, which is, I believe, which is done in, you know, it's just got butter on it, and then it's put on the grill, and it's crunched up a little bit, and people like that. So I get that. But my question is, what would you do with the piece of chicken? First of all, what cut of the chicken? The breast, a thigh? And would you square it up, and would you pound it? How do you prepare the chicken for what you would do to it if you're going to make this a homemade version of it? Wow, some mechanical stuff.
I would get, for me, if you're going to batter it and fry it in oil, I would get a skin-on chicken breast and pound it a little bit so it makes sure it extends over the bun, you know, outside of the little circle you have as a bun. So you get the nibble around the edges there. And I wouldn't pound it too thin. You want it thick. And that's it. But it would have to be, of course, a boneless thigh.
Right.
Otherwise, and I think the chicken breast for a sandwich is the best way to go. But I would get them with the skin on, because that's where the crunch is, baby, when you fry it.
Even if you put the batter on it, it's still going to come with the skin? Do these chicken sandwiches have skin on them? I mean, that's barbaric to most people.
Honestly, to God, Mac, I haven't eaten a chicken sandwich for my rest.
All right. Well, you're gonna have to test it and let us know.
Go to Popeyes in Fargo and find out what the hell's going on.
Well, you can start with Chick-fil-A. That was rated number two. So you could start with a spicy chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A.
I will do that. I'll do that tomorrow. As a matter of fact,
I don't want to tell you how to live your life or anything like that. But
I'm pretty meager as far as food goes.
As your hetero life partner, I do believe I have that privilege.
Yes, you have every privilege that I allow my wife to do. Almost everyone. But, I will have to try Chick-fil-A. It's been in town for maybe a year, and I haven't been there once yet.
Get out of town.
No, I haven't.
Oh, God. Let me just tell you, that's my kid's go-to place. Colleen, anyway.
I was in California. I must have gone through In-N-Out for about three or four times. I love that hamburger.
All right, now I know you got some place to be here in a little bit. Let me ask you a few more questions.
Take your time.
Here's another one. Mac, it is the middle of October, and that means turkey season is coming up now. How far in advance does the chef buy his turkey, or does he buy it fresh after ordering it? And it is now too soon to order my turkey if that's his course of action? So talk about what you do with your turkey. Do you buy it early and freeze it and then thaw it? Do you get it fresh? What?
I ordered my turkey about this time at this grocery store that has organic turkeys. I ordered a heritage bird. That's like the original turkey the pilgrims had.
Ooh.
Big mistake. Don't do that. It was terrible. But I would order any fresh turkey. You order it now, you pick it up about 5 days, 4 days before Thanksgiving. Because don't forget, you have to brine it.
Right.
Overnight.
But you, so you order now, and then you pick it up fresh, and then you go. Yeah. You don't freeze it.
Pick it up.
Got
and,
it.
And that's what they're doing now is taking orders.
Got it. Okay. All right.
If you picked it up now, you'd have to freeze it. And right. What's the point?
Okay. All right. All right. Here's another one. Chicken. This is a girl from Alabama. Okay. I soak my chicken in buttermilk laced with sriracha and hot as hell seasoning. Then I mix breading mix of seasoned flour, pour about a quarter cup of buttermilk in it, just enough to make it sticky, coat chicken, then fry. It makes a great hard coating that sticks to the chicken! Exclamation mark. Boom! Yeah, and you know Alabama girls.
Here's your aunt. The young woman from Alabama has hit the big casino.
They know how to do that shit in Alabama.
Damn right they do. That was great.
I then mix breading mix of seasoned flour, pour about a half a cup of buttermilk in it, and the buttermilk is laced with sriracha and hot as hell seasoning. So you got to know that. So that goes into the seasoned flour, and there you have it.
You're in the front row.
And just enough buttermilk. She doesn't say how much flour or seasoned flour she uses. And
probably to make it just sticky. So all the flour mix sticks on the chicken. And my recommendation or my thought would be that she would put it in the refrigerator for a half an hour before she fries it. So that that mixture sticks to the chicken.
Got it.
But that's what I would do.
All right. The interesting. Here we go. Making your own fried chicken sandwich. There's another one. Mac, I like a lot of pickles. Hold on. Alabama girl showed back up again. Exactly, Kim, about a cup of flour. So, and again, her point is just enough buttermilk to make it sticky so that it sticks to the chicken. Now, the question is, does she keep the skin on her chicken?
That's a good question.
Right.
I'll bet she answers that.
Right. I hope so, because again, people don't eat chicken like that anymore. Unless you go to KFC. Boneless, skinless chicken breast. And it's so you wonder how they get anything to stick on the meat.
Yeah. But don't have a bone-in chicken sandwich.
No.
Unless you're a caveman.
Things you don't tend to see on menus, right?
Nope.
Bone-in chicken Sammy.
That's some funny stuff.
Mac, are you a pickle guy? You know, growing up, I was not. Dill pickles I did not like. I like sweet pickles, but they're kind of bullshit, to be honest with you. Now, though, I've changed. And I changed because of Kim. We used to go have lunch, every Wednesday or Thursday? Do you remember what day was? Well, Thursday, I guess, was split pea soup day.
Thursday. Split pea and ham.
Yeah, so when I worked downtown, and Kim and I would go have lunch, and I wouldn't, but Kim would torture the guy who owned the restaurant. Oh no, her chicken's naked. All right, there you have it.
Okay, no skin.
No skin. Chicken. That
makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because I get it.
Got it. And so Kim would go. When we went there to eat, we'd get split pea soup because he had great split pea soup. And Kim would get a sandwich called the Ferocious Roast Beef. And Kim would trick it out. He wanted extra mayo, extra red onion. What else would you get on that thing?
What the hell did I get on that? He had, I think, provolone cheese was the cheese on there.
I can't remember.
and
come on, I thought it was Swiss cheese on that.
Lettuce, tomato.
Yeah, and, lettuce and tomato.
It was about a 6-inch high sandwich that you had to sit on to get it in your mouth, you know, press down on it. And, horseradish. I love the horseradish.
Now explain, horseradish sauce or horseradish on your sandwich?
It was straight horseradish.
Whoa, that's butch, man. It doesn't get much more butch than that.
You've got mayonnaise on the sandwich,
right?
And I always had extra mayo. And so when you spread that horseradish on top of the mayo, it's just perfect combination.
I think that I like the horseradish sauce with it, with the mayo. The horseradish, man, that stuff will clean out your sinuses and buckle your knees, man.
The thing is about horseradish, folks, is that it loses its potency after you open the jar.
Oh, so let it sit out a little bit?
They let it sit out, and it doesn't get, it's not as strong as when you first open the jar and you dip into it.
Then,
mix it with a little something, a little mayo.
Temper
it down a bit.
Yeah, I tell that story about the first time I ever tried horseradish was at a Marine Corps birthday ball, and one of the other platoon commanders, his parents were there, and they're Germans, right? They're like, oh, we love horseradish. I said, well, I've never really had it. They're like, oh, you should try it. So I take a dot, you know, I won't say a dollop, but more than I should. I put it on the prime rib, and I eat it, and I mean, this thing like created an internal combustion event in my mouth and throat. I get tears in my eyes. And they're Germans, right? They're going, ho, 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 we're Germans. We wouldn't react to that. Sissy Irish boy. Like, okay. Well, why don't you try some of them? And they did. And, oh, what happened? Got water in their eyes and all kinds of shit. I was like, yeah. They're like, that's powerful stuff. So it must have come right out of the can or right out of the jar.
I was at a steakhouse in Vegas one time, and I ordered a side of horseradish. And I tell you, it just about blew my nostrils off. It was so, they made it with fresh horseradish. I looked up at the waiter, and he had a big-ass grin on. It got me, man. If you have to, if you're going to get horseradish just straight up, you just take a little pinch, a little wee bit, and test drive it.
A little wee bit.
Is there anything up with it?
Yeah. You don't need to. Horseradish on your spicy chicken sandwich?
I would, yeah.
Why not, right? Test drive that shit.
So we got the
In-N-Out, we got the In-N-Out burger bun, we got Libby's batter on a piece of chicken on a nice quality chicken breast, right? That we're going to take out and we're going to pound a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
To tenderize it. Then we're going to do what Libby did, and then we're going to throw on our In-N-Out bun, we're going to throw a little bit of seasoned mayonnaise on it, and we're going to throw a few slices of pickle on it, because you can't have just one. And then we're going to put a little bit of horseradish or horseradish sauce on that thing. Make sure you have your favorite Dr. Pepper sitting next to you, too.
Yeah.
I remember when I encountered Dr. Pepper.
And I love that.
It was down in the South, because that's where it started, right?
Yeah, it was. I had my first Dr. Pepper in Hamilton, Ohio.
A pharmacist named Charles Alderton created Dr. Pepper in 1885. He worked at a drugstore in Waco, Texas, owned by Wade Morrison, right? legend has it that Morrison named it Dr. Pepper after the father of the young girl he once was in love with. Come on, man. Dr. Pepper. So, Dr. Pepper, remember on the bottle? It said 10, 2, and 4 on the bottle?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah, doctor. It said so when you looked at the bottle, it was a bottle of Dr. Pepper, right? That's how they used to sell them out of vending machines, right? During that era, research was discovered proving that sugar provided energy, and that the average person experiences a letdown during the normal day at 10:30, 2:30, and 4:30. A contest was held for the creation of an ad using this information. And yeah. So they put it on the bottle, Dr. Pepper, 10, 2, and 4. Fight fatigue, drink Dr. Pepper. How about that shit?
That is some serious stuff.
That is serious marketing shit right there. That's awesome. So that's how I remember it. I remember it on the bottle. You know, if you look at a glass bottle of Dr. Pepper, bigger than shit on the bottle. It said Dr. Pepper across the bottle and then 10, 2, 4.
And 10, 2, 4.
Yeah, like, what the hell? I'm not sure what that means. Give me some Dr. Pepper. And I was such a little, I wouldn't say I was a big criminal. I was like a harmless criminal, but I would be thirsty. And, you'd have vending machines in your apartment complex when I was, summers, and I would bring a cup and a can opener, right? And I didn't have my mom, Corporal Punishment Kathleen, would give me money to go get a Dr. Pepper. So do you think I was going to be deprived of one when it was that hot in Alabama? No. So I would take the can opener down to the vending machine, and I would just, without buying it, I would pop the bottle. You know how you used to have to put your money in and then pull it out?
Yeah.
I would just pop the lid. I'd pop the bottle top and stick my cup under, and I'd fill my cup up. That was my criminal activity for the day, vandalizing soda machines. Because I was thirsty, man. I like Dr. Pepper. So anyway, and I used to get to drink a lot of it at the stadium when I go with my dad. They had like a whole, cooler, right? One of those old metal, on four legs that they were long.
The top.
Right.
Half of it.
Right. They had Dr. Pepper in there, man. I would just try to drain that thing. And bazooka bubblegum, Dr. Pepper, whatever the hell they ate, man. I was loving it. So anyway. All right, my friend. I know you got stuff to do today. Thank you for being patient. And, thank you for all your advice about the chicken sandwich. So I appreciate it.
Well, good. And thank Libby.
Yeah, Libby, thank you for your naked chicken, your naked chicky salmon. The the naked chicken sandwich recipe. We appreciate it. So I will take Libby's ingredients and I will put it in this podcast. So you'll see Libby's recipe. So Libby, if you have like a picture of the recipe card, unless it's all in your head because you're an Alabama girl and you guys do your stuff like that, you can send me that and I will include it if you want to. Other than that, you're going to get what she sent me. So anyway. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Yankees.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, they'll need it. Good luck to you. See you later. That is the one and only hetero life partner of mine. Yeah, when they were on the air. And he goes, hey, you're my hetero life partner. And I was like, what? What did he just say? What does that mean? B. Kimball Holmes heading out the door, headed to physical therapy. So there you have it. Let's see. What was I going to do? Oh, he thinks he's still talking to me. He doesn't realize I turned him off. Hey, man, go away, man. I shut you off.
Okay. I'll shut off then.
Say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, folks. Have a great weekend.
There you have it. Going out the door. Going to physical therapy. Adios, amigos. To the bright side of the road. We've been level once again. On the bright side of the road. The girl has come with me. Here's another email. Mac, what do you think of the president hosting the G20 summit at a Trump resort? I think it's some straight up bullshit. Come on, man. Alright, if you're just joining the program today, don't touch that dial. In the first hour, you're going to hear General Mattis's speech that he did last night. Now, you've seen the snarky part of the speech where he got after the president, which is funny, okay? But the speech, the whole speech, is awesome. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it's pathetic that news outlets aren't saying, hey, General Mattis gave a great speech last night. Right? But you'll hear that, and it's great. It's funny, right, you know, throughout, but it's substantive, too. And so it's a challenge to get over this this political atmosphere in which we can't compromise, because compromise is the lubricant of democracy. And what you see now is bullshit in this country, right? And the nation has to get beyond that. So I don't know how we do it. Does it call for better people? Does it call for better leadership? Right? And then that's what needs to happen, and that's what he's talking about. Yeah, I can't end the show except with this music. I don't know why. It just does not sound right. And then after you hear him, Mary Reinwald joins us, right? And she joins us for a discussion about the renaming of another flag raiser in the most iconic photograph in Marine Corps history, maybe in American military history. Is there a more iconic photograph than that? I would say in the small group is the Eisenhower photograph talking to paratroopers before Normandy. To me, one you see as often where you say, yeah, I know that picture. Is there another one? Other iconic photographs that even approach the flag raising on Iwo Jima? But anyway, so Mary Reinwald, she was a part of the Hewley panel that was the General Neller appointed in 2016 to take a look at the evidence. And so she joined us for about 40 minutes. And it's pretty cool. It's a really cool interview because of her position, and then she's the editor of Leatherneck, so she writes, you know, she's steeped in Marine Corps history and journalism and writing about it, whatnot. So, it's an awesome interview with Mary Reinwald. And so you'll get to hear that. And then you'll get to hear us talk about spicy chicken sandwiches, evidently, which are the rage in the country. So maybe a little do-it-yourself kit. Now, here's what we do not have a recommendation for, you know, mayonnaise or dressing or whatever you put on it. So I'd be curious, right, for some feedback in that area. A late shithole weather update or forecast from Vacaville. Vacaville, gorgeous. Right. And then there was one other one. I don't know where it went. It was about Iwo Jima. The newest identified flag raiser. Jesus, Mac, again, I'm floored. This iconic picture continues to change in history. It's so true of the fact that these two men identified were examples of the greatest generation. They never said shit. No one knew. This is so compelling. I did not know until today another man was identified. Well, that's because you didn't listen yesterday there, onion boy. Good grief. Was it the fog of war or not doing their due diligence to identify these men? Who knows? Be well. Well, you know, Mary says it in the interview, right? When you see the evidence, right, and the evidence I'm talking about, should I put the Omaha World Herald article? OMA World Herald Iwo Jima. Let me see what comes up. Omaha World Herald. Now it's all. Okay, I think it's this article. Let me see. No, it's not that one. It's the original article. In the original article, new mystery. All right, here it is. I think it's by Matthew Hansen. And in the article that I'm talking about, that they originally did, they do an awesome job with the images in the article. It's not your basic. It's a web page. It's not just an article that appears, you know, in a little template. And the images are gigantic in it, okay? And so then there comes a part where you start looking at smaller pictures, and they start pointing it out. But the picture that I saw, right, is of John Bradley. And when you put your mouse over the picture, it magnifies it. It's one of those things, right? It's really cool stuff. So you look at Bradley, and he's standing there, right? He looks like a badass. He got a little bit of a mustache growing. None of those guys shaved. And the Marine Corps is so different, right? How we came out of World War II with we shave our heads and everybody looks the same? Okay, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm looking at 5 guys. Not one of them, right, is close to being the same. Not one of them. You have helmets, some without helmet covers. You have guys with jackets on. You have guys without. I mean, it's a shit show in terms of uniformity. But anyway, the Marine Corps comes out of there thinking that. So you see pictures of Bradley, right? Otherwise, it's just a bunch of dudes up there, right? And they identify each other in different ways, right? Some of them are identified because they went to jump school. And they went to jump school and they wore jump boots, right? I won't say Hank Hansen's like that. You know, he wore his boots high and he wore a blouse, right? And then you see pictures, you see the gung-ho picture on top of Iwo Jima. But anyway, if you go to that, there's a picture of Bradley standing there and then putting the second flag, right, on a pipe, okay? I believe that's what they're doing. Bradley seemed to the back after the first flag raising hours before Rosenthal's famous photo of the second flag raising, Bradley appears to be wearing a belt and gear different from that worn by a man who is said to be Bradley in the famous flag raising shot. Okay? And so this must be when they're putting the flag on the first flag, right? They're attaching it to a pipe, and Bradley's standing there. Now, he's standing there with his back to you, okay? And he's got his two medical units, right, over his shoulders, bandolier style, right? So they cross, you know, the strap goes on the far side of his head, on the far side of his neck, and he's standing there like that. But what you really see is his leggings and the way he cuffs his pants. And then you go back to the Iwo Jima picture, and you see everybody's feet. And the guy who's supposed to be Bradley has got totally different shit. Right? And so you do that, and you're just like, ooh. So anyway, it's really interesting, you know. Why, and so to answer the email, how did everybody miss that? I don't know. When they looked at this, I mean, you say, okay, here's pictures of Bradley on top of the hill. Here's pictures of Bradley in the photo. We know it's him. And nobody looked at like, hey, look, if this is Bradley, he's wearing leggings and his pants are like that. That can't be Bradley. He's got wire cutters, right? He's got an empty canteen. I mean, that all looks like grunt stuff, not doc stuff. And his war belt's completely different than Bradley's. I mean, it's plain as day. So, I mean, you probably wouldn't notice that till somebody raised the question of like, who's there? So, anyway, so interesting. So you'll hear Mary Reinwald talk about that and really cool. And the human part of this, and that is she sees Bradley as a tragic figure in this, right? He goes back there and he gets told essentially by this PAO, you're in this thing, right? Because we got this war bond drive to do, and it's not a famous picture at the time, right? Well, I mean, it was all over the world in this picture that would become something. But again, it's the 7th war bond drive coming up, coming home. Yeah, I was in this picture. Pfft, you know, whatever. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was in it. You know, Gagnon is different, though, and now he's not in the picture. Gagnon is one that says, I was in this picture. And so anyway, interesting. So you hear, and then the chef talks about spicy chicken sandwiches. So, on a weekend that my gut instinct tells me the Yankees will be eliminated. Have a great weekend. Get a chance to do post-traumatic winning next week down at Camp Pendleton, so I'm fired up about that. And then the following weekend, I take off. I go to Colorado Springs. I go to Quantico and then up to Minnesota. So I'm gone for, I don't know, about a week and a half doing post-traumatic winning. And honestly, I am as geeked up can be to go do that because – I love doing it. It is the coolest part of certainly, other than being a father, to Colleen and the rest of my kids, and an uncle and that, you know, that thing I do. Other than that, it's the coolest part without a doubt of my life. And that is to go help ease other people's pain, to help show them that they can transcend the storm that is trauma when it comes into your life, that they can have a bright future. And if you'll solve your ignorance problem and you'll solve your isolation problem, and then you'll go touch other people's lives, you can live a life that you cannot even imagine right now, So I'm going to get to go preach the word again. So looking forward to doing that. Anyway, have a great weekend. Don't touch that dial. More Ballmer and Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network, but I myself am over and out.